Iran has learned how to enrich uranium, the whole world knows that by now, and Iran has produced enough low-enriched uranium, more than a ton and a half, that with further enrichment could be turned into the core ingredient of a nuclear weapon. Although its enriched uranium is under the seal and monitoring of the IAEA, there is a fear that Iran could someday break the seals, turn off the video monitoring cameras, and use it to make a bomb. So the idea is that Iran would take most of its low-enriched uranium, send it to Russia and France for processing, to be returned to Iran for use in a research reactor that manufactures medical radioisotopes. Mohammad Sahimi, a professor at the University of Southern California who writes for the blog Tehran Bureau, says it's an elegant solution to the current problem of Iran's enriched uranium stockpile.
At least as far as the enriched uranium that is under inspection and monitoring of IAEA is concerned, there is no possibility of weaponization.
That's a real step forward.
Gary Sick is an expert on Iran and manager of the Gulf 2000 website. He points out, though, that there are still many details to be worked out, and it's not yet clear whether Iran has a genuine intent to make the deal work.
Now, if they renege on this, if they back away from it, then we find out what they really mean to do. But the fact that they agreed to that, at least tentatively, at the first round, is a useful step in the direction that I think we should be trying to go.
Recent events inside Iran may be responsible in part for this newfound willingness to strike a deal. The enormous protests sparked by the disputed re-election of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the crisis of legitimacy, have put Iran's leaders on the defensive in the international arena, says Mohammad Sahimi.
So what they want to do is perhaps reach some sort of accommodation with the West, so that the external pressure on them will be lowered. They cannot afford to be pressured from outside while having very little legitimacy inside the country, because they cannot basically fight two important wars, one inside and one outside.
The Iranian leadership was further shaken by the disclosure that it was constructing a second uranium enrichment facility, a secret one, near the city of Qom, says Gary Sick, who spoke recently in a conference call arranged by the Israel Policy Forum.
The creation of that second site at Qom is, to me, very clear. It is a fallback position, and in fact, the Iranian leadership in weak moments have actually suggested that that's what it was about. They've been told that they may be bombed. So what do? You prepare a fallback position, a plan B, so that if Natanz is wiped out by a deep earth penetrator, you have another place to go. I personally believe that it was intended to stay covert.
Natanz is the location of Iran's first and highly monitored enrichment facility. The second facility at Qom was made public last month, and inspectors from the IAEA are expected to visit it for the first time on October 25th. Participants in the talks, especially the U.S. and Russia, are hopeful that Iran will follow through on its earlier commitment. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton met last week in Moscow with Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, and there was some disconnect over what might happen if the current diplomatic process fails. Clinton said that Russia and the U.S. agree on tougher steps to come next.
We are also in agreement that if our diplomatic engagement is not successful, then we have to look at other measures to take, including sanctions, to try to pressure the Iranians.
That is not the way Lavrov saw it. He spoke through an interpreter.
At this stage, all efforts should be made to support the negotiations process. As for the threat of sanctions and pressure, we are convinced are counterproductive now.
If there is progress, the talks in Vienna could continue for several days. Mike Schuster, NPR News.